Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Hushmo Black Forum. Here we do it bigger, we do it better, we do it longer, and out of necessity, we'll do it louder than anyone out here. So relax. Here's your host, Hushmo Black.
Hey, y'all doing out there in cyberspace, my Facebook friends. Welcome to the Hushmo Black Forum. It's Saturday, y'all. Saturday, September 22nd, 2012. Boy, the year is, second day of fall. First fall weekend, y'all. You can tell in the weather here in the ATL. It's, the mornings are getting cooler, for sure. Anyway, that's the only thing that means to the Hushmo. We retired here, y'all. y'all don't know. We can start playing golf an hour, 2 hours later every day. The days that we play, that is. We don't play golf every day, y'all. But we don't have to worry about running from that sun quite as much this time of year. And hey, y'all. Once again, welcome to the Hushmo Black Forum, where our motto is to do it better, to do it bigger, to do it longer. And not in necessity, sometimes we'll do it louder. We don't like to go there. But what we do? Oh, yeah, y'all don't know, we advocate for justice, social justice. On behalf of Americans for African Descent, we like to get that in, not because we don't love everybody. It's just that we're a part of that community, and by extension, we find ourselves advocating for them, trying to provide a voice for those in the community that have no voice. That's what we do. We are just so happy to have you out here with us this evening. We got a call in, 310-742-1899. We've been getting some real diverse mixes out here on the Hushmo Black Forum. We try to screen people. We don't take that many calls, but so many crazy things can go on between the screening room and when you bring someone on live. So we try to do our best to keep it a clean family show, y'all. Hey. But we can't promise to keep everything on up and up. We're gonna do our best though, y'all. We got a great show coming up here, y'all. Just you know what we do? We cover current events, things that affect our community. We try to elaborate on it, I guess, if you will. You shed some light on it, try to make sense of it. Been following the 2012 presidential race here for the last 6 months, and this thing is just about to come to a head, y'all. It's about some 45 more days to go. See what Mitt Romney got a thing on my email. It's popped up, so we got 45 days left. Please donate $45 today, and he'll send you some kind of T-shirt. A bumper sticker, I'm sorry. How could I get that mixed up? But, wow, he somehow this past week wrote off damn near half the country, y'all. He got him on tape telling somebody about 47% of the people don't pay no tax. Think they're victims. 47% of Americans, y'all, he said, don't pay no taxes and think they are victims of the government. That's what Mitt Romney said. I didn't. You know, that's what he said. He's still trying to he's trying to walk back from it in the worst way, because I mean, wow, imagine that. Half the citizens of the country, some 150 million people, think that they are leeches or somehow otherwise dependent on government. Hey, come on, y'all. Come on. So, that's Romney in quite a bit of trouble this past week here. While at the same time running Mr. Paul Ryan was in front of the AARP convention here down in Florida, I guess, last night there. They booed him off stage. Almost. I don't know, something about the seniors don't like his Medicare his Medicare plan. They got a good reason not to like it, yeah. They got a very good reason not to like it, yeah. This guy's going to gut Medicare, mainly in particular, Medicaid. They're going to do that Medicaid altogether. Hey. So he's, but yeah, the Republicans have a a pretty rough week. Start with the outbreak of violence over there in the Middle East and the killing of the U.S. ambassador there in Libya. Excuse me, y'all. That thing is still playing out. And it's just such a slippery, volatile situation over there. It's hard to fathom that Mitt Romney and the Republicans could attempt to play politics with such a dangerous, combustible situation where American lives are at stake. And as it played out, I'm just so thankful that we have a president who has a calm hand when dealing with the explosive situation over there. Because had we had Mitt Romney in there, we probably would have been in there bombing somebody by now, according to him. That's what he said. And now we still gather the facts. It's such a crazy situation over there after the overthrow of a dictator, Muammar Gaddafi, who had been in power some 40 years. The country is just a virgin of a new nation, still coming to grips with all kinds of internal issues there. Security issues, economic issues, just a whole host of rewriting the Constitution and dealing with their security. It's mind-boggling what a crazy time it is over there. But thanks to the president, where we did take action, did put steps in place to see that we can better protect our citizens in that region, and at the same time start an aggressive search for the killers of our citizens there in Libya. But we didn't go in there and start dropping bombs immediately. And here yesterday, the pro-democracy folks over there in Libya took to the streets in masses, overran the perpetrators of the violence last week, the extremists there, and presented a clear face of support for the United States, for our nation, for the help that they received from us overthrowing Gaddafi. So, yeah, it looks like at the end of the day, the president was right on time with his handling of the unfortunate situation there. Just a terrible, terrible a time in our history here, and we need all the come heads that we can get at the helm, y'all. We do not need a volatile warmonger. Warmonger. We don't need a volatile warmonger at the helm of our military right now. Not in this environment. Not in this environment, yeah. This guy. So I'm just thankful, me for one, the Hushmo, is thankful that we have a cool, calm, and collected president in charge right now. Hey, y'all. Wow. It's coming up on about 10 minutes after 7, y'all, in ATL. It's a beautiful day here today. We've been sitting around here still trying to crunch, getting some things together for our the promotion of our second book that we just getting into our publisher here, y'all. So we're looking at it. My new book, White Racism, Black Hate, and American Reality, y'all. Yeah, still, it's a takeoff from my first book, The Water Boy, The Life and Trials of Jimmy C. Cameron, where we write about my family's history here in Georgia, pretty much. Both the books are about my family's history here in Georgia. The latest one, White Racism, Black Heat, came about as an offshoot of The Water Boy. And then when I finished, about halfway through The Water Boy, I looked at it and determined that I had too much information for just that one, for the one book when trying to... I started out writing an autobiography about my life, but then it morphed into all kinds of other things. But then about 2008, about halfway through writing my first book, Barack Obama started running for president. And all kinds of things happened. As you know, the country just went into this upheaval. And sure enough, race and racism got to be a part of the conversation. That's 2007, y'all. When 2000, early 2008, I started writing. So when I looked at my second book, even though it's about pretty much the Cameron clan here in Georgia, my family, race and racism was, in fact, a part of that that history. So it was a natural fit that I would write about the racism and the hate that we endured and lived through during that time. And it can play in to the conversation of the day, and we did that intentionally. We wanted to join the conversation of today dealing with racism and hate and saw it as a excellent opportunity to kill two birds with one stone, if you will, to talk about it and my family's history and to shed light on the conversation of today dealing with racism and hate. Mainly as it pertains to, well, not mainly, but one of the main focal points on the race and that we write about in our book is the president, an African-American president, the first one the nation has ever had, and how that really brought to the forefront, out of the closet, the racism that still is pent up in the country today. And never really never left. I mean, certainly it's to a lesser degree than what it was in 1860 going into the Civil War. Surely, it we've grown. The nation has grown by leaps and bounds from that. We're the first to admit it out here on the Hushmore Black Forum. The nation has grown by leaps and bounds since that time. There is still a problem with racism, because my book and my research shows that today there's still about 20% of Americans, mainly Americans of European descent, who are racist still today in the country. That's a big block. That's a big serious block. 40, 50 million people, y'all, here today that are racist, and that it. Not only is it detrimental to the president, but it's harmful to the country as a whole. What that does is any kind of close race, like we have a close race, a presidential race coming up, and this shouldn't really be the job that this president has done. This should not. This mid election here, his mid. This should not be a close election. He should win this thing by 14, 15, 16 points, easy. But because of a block of people, a humongous block of people, it's making this a lot closer race than it really should be. There's hey, a couple of articles out there on the, along with my research, suggests that racism in the country affects the president's approval ratings by up to 4 to 5%. Imagine that in a close race, just because some of the races could live with his ideology. They'd be better off with it, but yet, they will not, under no circumstances, vote for this guy. Under no circumstances. It reminds me of what Mitch McConnell said there the day the president took office. The next day, Mitch McConnell's out there and says, it's my sole job. You know Mitch McConnell, the good old senator from Kentucky? The leader of the Republican side of the House in the Senate, the leading Republican person in the Senate, he said his only job was to make sure that Barack Obama was a one-term president. Now, since that time, 4 years, that is all that Mitch McConnell has done. Hasn't did not one thing to benefit the American people, y'all. His entire effort has been to defeat Barack Obama in 45 days. That's going back over 3.5 years. That's the only thing he's been concerned on. Now, I'm not saying Mitch McConnell is a racist. But surely races harbor those same identical tendencies. They harbor those same identical tendencies. That is, they'd rather this country sink. They'd rather this country sink than to do anything. In order to help the president, to help the country, through the president's leadership. That's just the way it is, y'all. That's just the way it is. Now, 45 days, this shouldn't be no close election. This shouldn't even, this guy's did a fabulous job with the hand that he was dealt. Hey, look at, go back, you remember September 2008? You remember that? Wall Street collapsing, General Motors getting ready to go into foreclosure. We're losing 500,000-600,000 jobs a month. And they trying to convince somebody that they, somehow the country is worse off? Please, please. That's not an argument. This really shouldn't be a close election. It is. I contend it is because of that 20% block of people who happen to dislike the president for no other reason than his race. Oh yeah, there's some ideology differences now, no doubt, between those two parties. There's some differences between those two parties. I suggest that it wouldn't be that much difference had we a different president. If Hillary Clinton or any other president of a different persuasion was sitting in that office on this side, the politics would have been different. Yeah. There's no doubt in my mind the politics would have been different. Now, we think that people can see. Americans are not dumb. they can see the choice, a clear choice between Mitt Romney and President Barack Obama. The choices the country faced, they can see that, and I think they'll make the right decision. I mean, it shouldn't even be close. But and I like what Bill Clinton said when he said that the philosophy of we're all in this together is just a better philosophy than everybody's on their own. It's as simple as that, y'all. It's no more complicated than that when you start talking about putting the country on a solid footing. It's much, much better to have a ideology that suggests we're all in this thing together. We all have to chip in to get us to where we need to go together. Absolutely. And so you can see that this, and I think the people are starting to see that what's going on. And I feel good. Marginally so optimistic about the president's chances, y'all. But we got to get out and vote. Everybody got to drag somebody to the poll. Everybody got to get out and vote, y'all, because it's going to be close. And it shouldn't be. We have got to get out and vote and keep up the fight. I mean, this is serious. I mean, the two different competing ideologies here is crazy too, y'all, because like I said, that Republican Party is not the Republican Party that I knew as a kid. That's not the same Republican Party. No way. It's so far away from Lincoln. And if you go back to Lincoln, it's so far away from Lincoln. I don't know. I don't even know where Lincoln would. He couldn't get in. He couldn't get into the Republican Party. They probably killed Lincoln like they did then. If he came up here talking about freeing somebody, hey y'all, welcome to the Hushmore Black Forum, y'all. We just rambling on here, y'all. We're gonna take a quick pause for the calls here, y'all. It's about 25 after 8, y'all. We're going to catch you on the backside. Hey, y'all hang in there. We'll be right back.
advocated on your behalf. You're listening to the Hushmo Black Forum. Tell your friends about us. Saturdays, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Right here in cyberspace.
Do it bigger, do it better, do it longer. And out of necessity, sometimes we'll do it louder. Like I said, we don't like to go there. We like to keep everything on even keel here. These times are sometimes kind of hard to do that because of all the noise in the country, as they say about. And so we from time to time have to crank up the volume, if you will. Just to squeeze out our message in, and so from time to time we'll do just that. We'll do just that from time to time. Yeah, talking about the presidential race, y'all, and where we at here, how vital it is to. That we get out there and vote November 6th, you know, about 45 more days. Everybody who's listening to the sound of my voice, all my Facebook friends, please repost it or send out messages to your friends, telling them, urging them to get out and vote. Everybody need to get involved. It's important. Mitt Romney and the Republicans are, they already discounted us. They've already discounted us. Somebody said, whoa, I'm not part of that 47%. These are my peers, y'all. We sit around. I get a lot of my input from my peers. The High School Black Forum, I've stayed over the years, is made up of my peers that I've been associating with for over the last 30. Yes, some of them 40 years. So, and I get a excellent across a section of ideas and opinions and just a real good feel of what's going on in the country, believe it or not. Yeah, just from a small group of microcosm of, if you will, of us. And I come up with my show and my a lot of my material. So yeah. So and when I say that Mitt Romney and the Republicans are talking about throwing away half of the people. Absolutely, it does include Americans of African descent, because remember the polls show that he's got 0% of Americans of African descent support. Now, obviously, Herman Cain, Clarence Thomas, Alan West, the lady out there in Utah running for something, they're Republicans, they're black. I suspect that the number, therefore, must be somewhere less than half of 1% who's supporting Mr. Romney. There's a lot of reasons for that. Mainly, the number one reason is because for this election, the blacks are honest with their take on the candidates and see Barack Obama as the best candidate. Absolutely, as the best candidate. Now, sure, some of them, a percentage of blacks is going to vote for him just because he's black. The majority of American Americans believe, that they do. Certainly, I believe that he's way far and beyond the best candidate running for office for president of the United States this time. We can't afford y'all to be changing horses in the middle of the street. No way. Not the world's too dangerous. The world is much, 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 much too dangerous. Yeah. If y'all don't know, you better ask somebody. Hey, the world is just way too dangerous to turn it over to such a reckless party right now. Hey, I'll go that far. Turn it over to such a extreme a party right now. Yeah. Oh no. I don't know who run that party over there. Certainly Mitt Romney don't. He done found that out. He went out and picked Paul Ryan, somebody who was as volatile as nitroglycerin itself, to be his running mate, mainly at the behest of some right-wing billionaires. Hey, man, at the behest of some right-wing billionaires, y'all. Ain't word, has it? Now, I don't know why he picked him. I don't know, y'all, why he picked him. But, now, imagine if they get control of the country, and ladies, you ladies, you better watch your, what was that? When did ladies' suffrage come about? 1918? When ladies got the right to vote or whatever? 1918, was it? I don't know, but they are on a fast track to taking the country back there. It's what the Republicans, the right wing wing of it that is controlling it today, starting with that scary looking guy. Rias Primus or whatever his name is, that's ahead of that Republican Party. That guy is scary looking and sounds scary, sounds mad about something. I don't know what he's mad about, but he just sounds angry. And I get a funny set of vibes coming from him. I pick up a funny set of bright vibes. So, yeah, that Republican Party is scary, yeah. Not the entire party itself, just the wing that's running it, just the right wing that's controlling it right now. The country's got to be aware and keep those jokers as far from power as they possibly can. You know? They're talking about doing a great disservice to this nation if they were allowed to get back in there in control. Not that group. No, I'm not afraid of the Republican Party, but not that group. Not that group who's got the bull by the tail and is running that thing right now. We can't have that. Hey, so where we at, y'all? Oh, my goodness. It's about 20 minutes to 8 o'clock, y'all. How time flies when you're having fun here on the Hushmo Black Forum, y'all. We got quite a few more things we want to touch on this evening. One, dealing with... Oh, yeah, before we get away from Mitt and him writing off the 47% who he now he's talking to an audience. Imagine this, y'all. He's talking to the audience of rich donors behind closed doors when he blurt this out, talking about the 47% who don't pay tax, who are dependent on government and who think they are victims. He kind of lumped all this in together to almost half the country there. That's a that's kind of misleading, y'all. You got to kind of cipher through all what Mitt Romney was saying there. When he say victims, really, and those who want the government to take care of them, is code for black people. It's code for black people, and we not doing anything else for black people, y'all, when it get right down to it, when he say victim, because surely he knew that 47% of the country are not victims, don't claim to be victims, y'all. But and to make sure that he know that the people that are on Social Security know the older folks, especially the crowd in Florida who Paul Ryan tried to convince that we were going to be good by you old folks. He had his mother out there. Now his mother's white, because remember the sham going forward in the Republican the budget when they start talking about reforming Medicare. They're not talking about Medicare so much as they are talking about Medicaid. That's the crowd. That's the group that they consider are lazy and leeches and living at the trough of the government, the people that are on Medicaid. That's the group. That's the people that he was talking about when he said that they claim to be victims. He was talking about that group of people. Now, we have to be careful. We have to be careful, y'all. When we hear the right wing, the Republicans, start talking about this class of people who think they're victims, that's the Republican slang for or accusation they use when they think that people are just useless, lazy people claiming to be victims, crying wolf for no other reason than their own lack of get up and go, if you will, to make a better life for themselves. And I said that don't look at me, don't put that title on me, even though because some in our community, Americans of African descent, are truly victims of this system. And we must not allow for Mitt Romney or the Republicans to throw that word out there loosely and attach it to some 150 million Americans who he know are not victims, yet some of those 150 million are victims. We've got to make sure that I, for one, and I talked to my peers about this, and I went over it all in my book, White Racism, Black Hate, and American Reality, where I explained it in there that me, and most Americans of African descent who trace their, certainly those who trace their history back prior to 1954 in this country, and indeed a lot of those folks such as myself could trace their history right back to slavery here in the state of Georgia, those folks are victims. They are victims. I am a victim of this government today. Still, I am a victim of the government. Now, I had to explain it to a peer, one of my peers, American of African descent. Yeah. Oh no, this is a big disagreement within our own community. So obviously, it's a hard concept for white people to understand. A lot of them don't even want to understand it. don't take the time to. But, I consider myself a victim. There's a percentage of Americans of African descent who are truly victims of the system. Here's what the Census Bureau suggests. The 2010 figure suggests that this is according to a person that worked within the Census Bureau, that only 18% of Americans of African descent can trace their lineage directly to slavery here in this country. 18%. That's a bogus number in my mind. I think it's quite a bit higher than that, but if we go with that, if I gave them that, say 18%, that's still approximately 10 million Americans of African descent who going by what the Census Department says, I have a legitimate right to a reparation because their history is going to include a period after 1865 where they were subjected to separate but equal laws here in the country, here in the state of Georgia and throughout the South and indeed parts of the North. So, yeah, that and I was born here personally now because I had to tell my friend this, explain it to him. I was born here in Georgia in 1945. For my first 9 years until 1954, I had no 14th Amendment rights protections here in Georgia. I started school here in a segregated school system, riding the school bus right past a brand new white school down in Henry County, Georgia, y'all. So, yeah, that... that deprived me of my rights to attend schools of my own, and my parents at that time was deprived of just about every other decency in the society. Yeah, in 1945, y'all. So I'm a victim until I'm properly reparated for that. I have to be reparated for that. Much like James Madison was trying to say in that Federalist Paper number 51 when he said that liberty, our Constitution guarantees a liberty and justice, and our liberty, our internal liberty, the liberty within me, will forever seek justice and, until I find it. In this case, reparation for the 14th Amendment rights that were taken away that caused me and my family to have a disadvantage economically here in the country. And it's still today. It is why the Brandeis University can do research showing the huge gap, a despair between black and white families in the country, yeah, because of the separate equal laws, the racism. That's what it was. And when you break all this stuff down, yeah, that's what it's going to come down to, the racism that existed not only in the civil society, the society at large, but through the laws of the government. The state government of Georgia, the separate equal laws, the Plessy thing that came down in the 1896 when the federal government itself upheld the separate equal. So, yeah, it had a direct effect on the economic status of me and my people. No doubt. So yeah, that group of people say it's only 18%. See, it's only 18%. That's 10 million Americans of African descent who are victims today. Who are victims today of the system, of that system, who have never been properly reparated for the injuries they suffered during that time. So. I'm going to continue to be a victim until that day comes. It's just like anything else. Just like somebody I seen came down on Facebook that which is worse, somebody finding out the truth about a lie or the lie itself, and surely that's the same. It's the same until. The lie has got to be worse because the truth will set you free, and it's like a positive and negative type of a thing there, y'all. My injury is going to forever be there until it's wiped out with justice. My injustice, the injustice that was perpetrated on me and my family through these laws, is going to forever be there until justice is served. It's just a law of nature. It's a law of every the spiritual world and the world in our reality here in this country. Yeah, yeah, it can't be no other way. The liberty that's within me will forever seek out the justice that I feel is due. So they are victims, but we don't want Mitt Romney to dilute just who those victims are, and we want to explain why there is a segment of the society that are true, real victims here. And we try to do that in my new book, White Racism, Black Hate, and American Reality, is about that. We talk about it on our show here, trying to get people educated to, we don't want nobody to, and that's not wealth, that has nothing to do with no wealth redistribution, y'all. That's all junk. That's all junk. And I think the people that come up with this, you hear keep rambling on about somebody want to redistribute our wealth. Hey, those people out there clapping for Mitt Romney when he's missing that junk, don't nobody want nothing from you. You ain't got nothing for nobody to take or redistribute. What are y'all, come on. The government, different matter here, y'all. That's a different matter. Make no mistake. And don't I don't hear this argument by it's your tax dollar and we are the government, because I'm going to tell you, if you think that way, then you were the government when the atrocities occurred. You was the government then when my 14th Amendment rights was taken away. So no, I ain't buying that. I got a beef with the government itself, whose laws on the books prevented me from having a equal opportunity to further my status in the society. Yeah, no doubt. It's such a fascinating conversation, y'all. Because so it's amazing just listening at the commentators on what's going on in the country and how little they realize, how little they want to realize the plight of me and my people here in this country. The grief, how little they really know about what happened to my people here in this country. When they sit back and talk about everybody's got an equal chance, get out there and work and die. But yeah, it's such a crazy, if you look at the history of the country, it's such a crazy argument to try to make. But a lot of people don't care. A lot of people want to ignore that history, y'all. They want to ignore it, and it's hard. It's hard to ignore it. I won't allow them to ignore it, not as long as I can speak or talk about it, write about it. I'm going to put it out front, my history I'll talk about, and try to educate the audience about. I'm a victim. I am, I'm not ashamed to say it, talk about it. My peers, a lot of them now, America, a lot of our community is dead set against this characterization of them as being victims. I got a friend that swear, man, he ain't no victim of nothing, and he, get up and he realized the insists that racism is at play here in the country. He somehow can't come to grips with the fact that he's some kind of a victim, because he rose up out of the South, out of Florida, somehow, and made it to middle class, successful by any stretch of the imagination. But he's not taking consideration his parents' plight or his grandparents' plight, or even his plight before 1954. He wiped it all away. But no. I take a different a take on it. That's all. I ain't mad at people who don't want to go along with my take on this thing. I just put my take out there and let people look at it and dissect it and come down on it where they will. That's all I do. And I'll forever advocate for reparation for myself and my family. I'll forever do that as long as I live until such time as the debt is paid in some form or fashion. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, y'all, where we at here? Boy, we rambling on here tonight, y'all. Hey, it's 5 minutes till the hour eight, y'all. We're going to take a quick pause for the calls here, y'all. And hang in there, y'all. Got me, the Hushmo, driving this train tonight, y'all, on the Hushmo Black Forum. We'll be right back. Hang in there.
Advocating on your behalf, you're listening to the Hushmo Black Forum. Tell your friends about us. Saturdays, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Right here in cyberspace.
Let's go back for him. We back. We moving right along, y'all. How y'all doing out there in cyberspace? Yes, sir, to y'all. I know y'all are anxious to get out. Tell a friend about us, y'all. The Hushmo Black Forum. Go out and check us out and follow us on our website, the HushmoBlack.com. HushmoBlack.com is our website. You can find all our archive shows out there, or come to Blog Talk Radio / Hushmo - Black. You can find us there. Follow us on Facebook. Several ways to get our broadcast, our message. Tell a friend about us. HushmoBlack.com. Go there. Keep up with us. We know that it's hard to get anybody to sit down in front of a computer and be listening to Blog Talk Radio for 2 hours at a time. We come on from 7 to 9, y'all, every Saturday, but a lot of my listeners, they go and just pull it down or, you know, go back to my website or whatever, download it and listen to it at their leisure as they're perhaps mopping the floor. And so on Saturday morning, with nothing else to do, they'll throw it on and listen to it, you know. And that's a good way to do it. I mean, come back to it. It's hard. And, yeah. But we thankful for our audience out there and just do appreciate them tuning in to us each week. And hopefully they're disseminating our message to their friends. Every week it seems we're getting larger and larger. So hopefully my audience will also be interested in checking out my second book, White Racism, Black Hate, An American Reality, which will be hitting your bookshelves, I promise you, shortly. In the meantime, go to my website, too, and check out my first book, The Water Boy, The Life and Trials of Jimmy C. Cameron. It's is out there on sale, and it would be helpful to read that first book of mine to better lead you into the second. It's a great, great read. My first book, The Water Boy, The Life and Trials of Jimmy C. Cameron. Now, I'll let you know right now, it's void of any literary acclamations. I'm not. I'll let you know that right now. But the story itself is really interesting because it came out in 2010, but I started writing that book in 2007 or 2006, pretty much. But yeah, 2000, and it's got some great, great pieces in there that is relevant about today, some 4 years later. So yeah, go check that book out, The Water Boy, The Life and Trials of Jimmy C. Cameron. It started out as a autobiography of myself, and kind of morphed into a biography of my family's history, and then eventually this epiphany that I had in Vietnam when I got wounded kind of dominates the story pretty much. So I wound up finding I just skirted over the three different subject matters, if you will, and but you'll find it interesting for no other reason than, like I said, the epiphany that I count or had, or however you want to characterize it, on that battlefield in 1966 kind of dominates that book, but it's well worth checking it out just for that story by itself. Yeah, y'all, that's me. I'm shameless plugs for me. Hey, that's what I do. It's my show, y'all. I'm an author. I write. Oh, yeah, I sell my work. Hey. So, yeah, y'all, two books, The Water Boy, The Life and Trials of Jimmy C. Cameron. That's my first undertaking. And my second one, due out directly White Racism, Black Hate, and American Reality. Check them out, yeah. It's about 5 minutes after 8, yeah. September 22nd here, 2012, yeah. Hey, we 45 days out from the election, 2012, 12-21 is right around the corner, y'all. They got all kinds of stuff out there on the internet now about 12-21 here. They've got societies, they got all kinds of people getting ready for 12-21. I don't know what's going on with exactly. I've voiced my opinion about it before, and I'll say that while I don't necessarily believe that it's by any means the end of this world, I think there may have something to maybe some calamity that transpire on that date. But I don't think it'll be the end of the world. No, that's just me. In my mind, there is something peculiar about the Mayan calendar, why it ends on that day, lead me to believe there that it's possible that some calamity will occur. Now, I don't see the end of the world on that day. But nonetheless, better safe than not, y'all. you might want to get together with the man upstairs. In case, hey y'all, welcome to the Hushmo Black Forum here. Where you got me, the Hushmo, driving this train tonight. Oh yeah, we got a train out here too, y'all, that we're the conductor of. Y'all don't know westbound number 9. Oh yeah, the westbound number 9. We that's how we travel. That's how we do it, y'all. When you hear
it's a United States Congressman.
Whoa. Somebody from the street tried. Hey, y'all, hold up. Hey, don't start no stuff here. Hey, we almost let the peanut gallery on live, y'all. Hey, we can't do that. We almost let the peanut gallery on live here, y'all. That peanut gallery don't. That peanut gallery bear watching. We have to keep a short leash on them. We have to keep a short leash on them, y'all. We had a number of things to talk about, things left of this evening. One of the things that that caught our attention this past week is we were talking about different historical figures in our community here in the African American community over the years here. I came about Marcus Garvey. I just briefly delved into his story, looking at this guy. We knew about Marcus Garvey. He wants to take everybody back to Africa and all this and that. Just a fascinating story, Marcus Garvey. Just a fascinating story, y'all. Y'all check it out. Go Google Marcus Garvey and check him out. His biography. The guy was born in Jamaica here, it says, in 1887, in St. Anne's Bay, Jamaica, of poor parents. Well, I don't know how poor his parents was, but he was born black back then. Yeah, he was poor. But he made his way he made his way up. Well, first of all, his parent was a stonemason, which now I take that back. He was not poor. His father was a stonemason. Imagine that. And it makes more sense now. His father was a stonemason. So he had some means then, even though he was in Jamaica, a black Negro, as they were referred to at that time. By the time he was 14, he had became an apprentice's apprentice. And then in 1903, he traveled from this little town outside of Kingston to Kingston from St. Anne's Bay to Kingston, Jamaica, and there he became a apprentice's apprentice. Did a lot of things early on in life. Took part in an apprentice strike or something in 1907 that eventually failed, but it gave him a thirst for being active in the struggle for civil rights and human rights and things at that early age. And he found himself writing about his experience throughout the Caribbean for some years. He traveled throughout Central America working as a newspaper editor and writing about the exploitations of migrant workers in the plantations. He later traveled to London where he attended Birkbeck College and worked for the African Times and Orient Review, which advocated pan-African nationalism. Wow. This is where he got came of age, if you will, politically. He came of age politically there in England, in London, and formed his ideology going forward. He left, I guess, he returned to Jamaica. He was in London, I guess, in 1907, returned to Jamaica in 1912 and founded the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association. He founded it in 1912 in Jamaica. It was a kin or a brother of the at the time, the NAACP. Okay, it was a organization advocating for social justice for the blacks in Jamaica initially, for the humongous injustice that they found themselves in on that little island there back then, and black people all over the Americas at the time. He later came to... this is Marcus Garvey, y'all. Just looking at Marcus Garvey. You've heard so much about him, but his life story is just nothing short of miraculous what this guy had done and was about. Marcus Garvey returned to Jamaica in 2012, formed the Universal Negro Improvement Association with the goal of uniting all African, the entire African diaspora, to establish a country and absolute government of their own. He wanted to take all black people who had been deported or pulled drug out of the motherland and scattered throughout the Caribbeans and the Americans. He wanted all those people to unite and form this one government of their own to break away from, if you will. Remember, this is after the Civil War. This is 1912. So way past the Civil War, and everybody was supposed to be free and stuff like that. Yet we were still bound by the chains of discrimination here in this country, and yet throughout the free world, throughout certainly the Americas. So he he was battling that. His ideology was much in tune with Booker T. Washington. In fact, he established a dialogue with Booker T. and came to America to set up shop in 1916. He came here to raise funds for a similar venture to the one that Booker T. had founded, talking about Tuskegee University. Marcus Garvey was so impressed with Booker T. and his thought, thinking along of self-reliance and self-dependency, that him and Booker T. Got along quite well. When Marcus Garvey came in 1916, he wound up staying. He wound up in Harlem up there in New York. He wound up in Harlem up there in New York, and by 1918, he began publishing a widely distributed newspaper, Negro World, to convey his message of self-reliance in New York. He formed a branch of the UNIA in New York, in a chapter of it in Harlem. To promote his separatist philosophies of social, political, and economic freedom for blacks was his philosophy, separatist philosophy for social, political, and economic freedom for blacks. Imagine this now. This is 1918. Crazy, crazy, crazy time in our history. He's here in New York. And expanding his advocacy group, this a Universal Negro Improvement Association, his Pan-Africanism philosophy, if you will. It says that in August 1920, the UNIA claimed some 4 million members. Can you imagine that? In 1920, Marcus Garvey's UNIA claimed 4 million members. He scared the white people to death, y'all. That was a problem. He scared the white people together to death. Among other things, this guy was quite an orator to y'all. This guy had a heck of a some heck of a oratorical skills, and he had motivated black people back there to no end in terms of self-motivating, getting them to join his cause, and to he started the a Black Star Line. He started a shipping line. Hey, listen. He started a shipping line to connect all of the black people together with a economic system. Okay, let's go back. By 1919, Marcus Garvey and the UNIA had launched the Black Star Line, a shipping company that would establish trade and commerce between Africans in America, the Caribbean, South and Central America, Canada, and Africa. Out of New York City up there, that was 1918. 4 million members. This guy done set up a trade route, started up a shipping line so that blacks throughout the world could create their own economic system, if you will, is what it amounts to. Oh, yeah. The UNIA under Marcus Garvey had 4 million people, blacks, throughout the Americas, y'all, hooked up together looking for a brighter day. And they were well on their way, too. Now, him and Booker T had it going on, y'all. They had the right idea. The only thing they didn't have was, remember, because Booker T had came along in 1881 when he formed Tuskegee. It was 5 years after that Southern Homestead Act had removed the 46 million acres set aside for the ex-slaves to provide a nucleus, economic nucleus and property for them. That had been wiped out. They had took that off the books. The Southern Homestead Act had it vanished in 1876. So they didn't have the land. Booker T was never able, blacks were never able to get the sufficient amount of land at that time that would have enormous amount of good toward putting us on the economic, solid economic foundation. Coming out of that Civil War. But here, this is 1918. This guy, coming from Jamaica, had saw the need for blacks throughout the diaspora outside of the motherland. He saw a need for them to be self-sufficient and was willing and able to put together a movement that would have created such an independent society, had not been for, hey, he scared the white people to death, y'all, here in this country. He scared the government of this country to death. They weren't about to have this guy come in here and mobilize the blacks in this country to become independent, self-thinking, self-sufficient people of their own. It would ruin the capitalistic system here. It would tilt the labor. It would tip the labor portion of that equation there in the system. No longer would they have access to the cheap black labor that they did. If all of them was going to run off on their own and join with this guy and people like Booker T, they wouldn't have no more people to work for damn near free. So Marcus Garvey, 1920, this guy, listen, he done started a shipping company, the Black Star Line, that would establish trade and commerce between Africa the Caribbean, South and Central America, Canada, and Africa. It would establish a commerce between Africans residing all over the world, you know, outside of the motherland. And he had set up a series of companies that would manufacture marketable commodities in every big industrial corner in the Western Hemisphere. Hey, this guy was heavy, y'all. He scared these people to death. They had a, 1920, let's see, they had a, their first convention was 1920, the UNIA. Universal Negro Improvement Association. Universal Negro Improvement Association claimed 4 million members and held its first international convention at Madison Square Garden in New York City before a crowd of 25,000 people from all over the world, y'all. This is the 1920, y'all. Hey, this stuff is heavy, y'all. It scared them people together. He had 25,000 black folks up in Madison Square Garden. The United States ain't never seen a crowd that big in their life. Not all black folks. Not all talking about you know, working together and creating their own commerce. It scared them to death, y'all. I'm sorry. I see what happened to them. Uh, Oh, yeah, they're going on, y'all. Got a whole shipping line, shipping stuff all over the world, y'all, between the African diaspora. Wait a minute, they're going to stand for that. They did. They weren't going to stand for that back in that day, and they put a stop to it, y'all. They put a stop to Mr. Marcus Garvey. In 1922, Marcus Garvey and three other UNIA officials was charged with mail fraud involving the Black Star Line. Oh, this is going to be... The trial records indicate several improprieties occurred in the prosecution of the case. In other words, this guy was railroaded, y'all. The government framed him and railroaded him and brought him down. It says that it didn't help that the shipping line's books contained many accounting irregularities. On June 23rd, 1923, Garvey was convicted and sentenced to prison for 5 years. That was the beginning of his downfall. He was no more the same. That UNIA, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, they was intent to wipe that out, and they did. They drummed up these false accusations on Mark Garvey dealing with some mail fraud related to his main piece there, the Black Star Shipping Line. Locked him up for 5 years. He got out in 1920, sent him to jail for 5 years. He got out. They let him out in 1927 and deported him out of the country. They got him out of here. They got that guy out of here. That's how he got out of the country. Yeah, they deported him in 1927. He was released from prison and deported to Jamaica. Garvey continued his political activism and worked with and the work of the UNIA in Jamaica, and then moved to London in 1935. But he did not command the same influence he had earlier. Oh, they had broke him by then. 1935, they broke him. They had broke him. He couldn't come back into this country. He was over in London. One of the following his downfall or demise, the only other thing that transpired of a note was that history says that he collaborated with outspoken segregationists and white supremacist Senator Theodore Bilbo of Mississippi to promote a reparation scheme. The Greater Liberian Act of 1939 would deport 12 million African Americans to Liberia at federal expense to relieve unemployment. The act failed in Congress, and Garvey lost even more support among the black population. Yeah, just a crazy history, y'all. I wanted to bring that out. Now looking back at history, and I can see exactly what happened to Mr. Marcus Garvey, y'all. This guy, one of our greatest advocates, was railroaded. Guy was doing tremendous amount of good for our community back there in 1920. And it's just amazing how as soon as back then, our people talked about removing themselves from the workforce here in this country. And setting up a shop of their own. How how ugly and oppressive the government and the powers to be react and reacted to type of endeavors throughout our history. And Marcus Garvey, just one prime example of the institution of racism at work and preventing our people from achieving economic equality. Marcus Garvey, just another example of the laws in the country itself preventing Americans of African descent from moving ahead. That's what it is. Y'all check him out, Marcus Garvey. Go Google him. Study his history. It's certainly ingrained with our history, with the history of the country. It's an important part of it. It's an important part of the history. Hey, y'all. Welcome to the Hushmo Black Forum. Y'all got me, the Hushmo, here. Yeah, what we do out here, we advocate on behalf of Americans of African descent. Advocate for justice, though. For social justice for everybody. And we love everybody. We, no doubt. So we just want to thank you for being a part of our show tonight. And just tell your friends about us. Send us some email. Send us some response back on Facebook if you find some interest in our program. Let us know. Like us out there on Facebook. Pass us on. And we appreciate it. We are growing. Every show looks like we have more and more listeners, or archive listeners, who come out and pull our stuff down and view it at their leisure. We think we've got a message to pass on. Do we have an ego? Absolutely. But we think... Hey, we think we have a message. Certainly we have an opinion. Somebody, Peter Garrison, we certainly have an opinion, no doubt. Hey, y'all. It's about 25 till the hour of 9, y'all. The evening is slipping away from us here. Oh, yeah. 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 We're looking at our notes, y'all. We got four things going here. We looking at Paul Rand is up on this one thing here where he was getting booed down in that AAR convention there. Yeah, he had brought his mother along there to show them that, oh, no, we ain't going to mess with you people who's on Medicare. You just like my mother. Hey, those people try to talk all over. I said, yeah, we ain't dumb enough. We too dumb to know that what the scheme is. He's trying to... So he's traveling around with his mom, trying to convince the senior citizens of Florida that the good old Republicans are not going to mess with them because they're over 55 like his mother. Hey, y'all stay engaged. Y'all please stay engaged out there. My Facebook friends, young folks, old folks, black folks, white folks. Independence, stay engaged. Just look at the two candidates, look at the two different visions for the country. One is a philosophy of we're all in this together as a nation, as a people. The other is a philosophy of you own your own. To each his own, everybody, every man fend for himself. And that's a good philosophy today if you're Mitt Romney. If you're rich today, that would be that philosophy would suffice for perhaps the top 5%ers. But let me tell you, those other 95%, they I believe, is going to appreciate some camaraderie, some help, some group interaction to make this thing, to move this thing forward. We it's just a much better ideology or train of thought to have, is that we're all in this thing together. There's no getting around it. There's no a way that you can separate us out into this group or that group, whatever. Mitt Romney was talking about some 47% of people. Imagine some 47% of American citizens here. This guy wants to a discount, and somehow. Yeah, it's just a crazy, ignorant statement, according to one of the journalists at the Washington Post, that he would get so many people, so many citizens here looped, lumped together in that statement. A lot of those folks are Republicans, by the way, who pay no taxes through Social Security, through military involvement, through other ways. Most of them not. Most of them don't consider themselves victims. Now, and as I stated before, there are victims lumped into that 150 million some people he's talking about, because obviously there are some victims of the system, because I laid out to you early on a scenario where at least 18% of Americans of African descent are victims of the system, who trace their history back in this country, back in this state prior to 1954, and was subjected to separate equal laws, which were inherently unequal, says the Supreme Court in 1954. And they were victims. I was a victim. I was born in 1945. So, yeah, a segment of that 145 million people are victims. That's a long way from claiming that all some 147 million, some 150 million people are all claiming to be victims. No, that's not. And he knew better. Mitt Romney knew that all those people, that number wasn't claiming to be victims, but he made sure that he included portion that were without breaking that segment of society out. He'd never say, oh, yeah, we got some black people over here with slaves that we turned loose 200 years ago, and damn it, they should be on the same footing that we are today. He could never get away with saying that, even though that's what he was thinking, and a lot of people think that way. Without considering the injustices that, or overlooking the injustices that caused the economic divide that we find ourselves with here in the country today, because of those racist laws that was on the books. Yeah, so there are a certain a number of people here in the country who are true victims of the system here, and I'm one of them. I make no qualms about it. I'm not, and don't hesitate to let folks know that I do consider myself a victim for those reasons. I want to tell people and explain it to them exactly why it is that me and my family, a portion, a great portion of the Americans of African descent are, who trace their history back prior to 1954. That's what I contend. And so, yeah, we don't know. I don't like anything about grouping people together, or at least my people, at least me. Don't classify me as a liberal or conservative or this affirmative action junk. that came about during the 60s is nothing but junk. They grouped my people, me in, with about nine other classes of people here in 1965 for this affirmative action scheme that they put in place. And at the end of the day, America's of African descent got hardly nothing out of that ordeal, y'all. Got hardly nothing out of that affirmative action deal. If you truth be known, who got the most? American of European descent, white females. They got the greatest share of that affirmative action dollars from 1965 up until today. Check your history, y'all. Check the facts out. So in essence, white people got most of the dollars that was set aside for affirmative action type programs. It didn't come to Americans of African descent. They got some crumbs here. Clarence Thomas benefited from it. He got to be a Supreme Court justice. So, using affirmative action set aside or something. Hey, so you know, hey y'all, just look at the numbers now, y'all. We only 13% of this big old pie here, y'all. So you know those dollars can favor us when a white female was considered a minority, just like the blacks was. Hey, that was a numbers game, y'all. If white females are a minority and they make up the majority of the population in the country, you know, where are the dollars going? Hey, come on, stop it. Where are the dollars going? And with. And that's where they went, y'all. So, no, affirmative action, don't look at me. Don't even dare accuse me of doing anything or taking money from anybody in some affirmative action scheme, because affirmative action dollars went right back to you, your wife. Hey, y'all, I'm just saying. Hey, I'm just saying, y'all. I ain't hating on nobody. I love everybody, by the way. I want to let you know that's one of my characteristics is love. God's charity. I'm endowed with it. Endowed with God's charity, y'all. No doubt. So, I love everybody. I can't help it. Hey, y'all, I got the Hushmo Black Forum here, y'all. You got me and the Hushmo just rambling on here tonight. We all over the place. Talking about things that just make no sense. How Mitt Romney was somehow trying to accuse the president of running this divisive campaign, and then turn around and write off half of the American people. I think we can put that to rest about who's is running some divisive campaign now. We can put that to rest, y'all. I don't want to hear that come out of their mouth again. They can't put that out there, that the president is running this divisive campaign. And this guy discount throw away 47%, some 150 million American citizens, y'all. Now, they can stop that. Oh, yeah, they can stop that. So now he can get back to... he could change that conversation, y'all. Hey, Mitt Romney did release his tax returns for 2011. Yeah, that's all. He still only released 2 years, and then he come up with some kind of a bit of information that his average taxes for the last since 20 years, since 1990, has been some 14% now. Listen at this. That's his average tax return. Since 1990, notice he go back 20 years to get an average of 14%, because easily within those 20 years, 1980, let's look at that. 2002, that's 22 years to 2012, y'all. And he contend that he paid 14% in 2011. He said going back to 1990, his tax people said that his average amount he paid in the taxes has been 14%. But remember, Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, said that somebody told him he hadn't paid no taxes for 10 years. So out of this 12 years, out of this 22 years, Harry Reid contend that he didn't pay taxes for 10 of those years, and that could still be the case, y'all. We don't know. That could still be the case. Because remember, all Mitt Romney told us today was that his average, he paid on an average of 14%. So, yeah, that could very well be that some years he paid 22%, 24%, and then some years he didn't pay nothing. You could average that thing out where 10 years he didn't pay not one dime of taxes, and maybe the other 10 of those years he paid 24%. That would wipe out, whatever. That would come back to him not paying any taxes for 10 years. Hey, that's not, so it's not a far-fetched. And if you think that we're not smart enough to see through the bull that he put out, he's crazy. He's crazy, y'all. He's got to either release those tax returns or what? That junk about him paying an average of 14% don't mean a hill of beans. That don't mean a hill of beans, y'all. This guy still could be not paying his fair share of taxes. In fact, still could have not paid taxes, period, for 10 years like Harry Reid suggested. Who y'all know? That's why it's so vital that the guy releases tax returns so that he acquired all of the innuendos and suspicions floating around about his taxes. I'm grudging the guy for making money. I'm happy that he's making money now. I am not happy with some of the ways and some of the ventures that he got involved with while at Bain Capital. Closing plants down and shipping jobs overseas. I'm not too happy about that at all. But yet, I don't begrudge him for making money. I mean, not in the capitalistic system that we live in. That's the name of the game, if you will, to make money. And yes, indeed, in this system, they make money on the backs of someone else. That's just the way the system works. It has to work that way. Believe it or not, y'all. It has to work. Capitalism has to work that way. And it does. It's just an interesting time here, y'all. We got to keep hammering on Mr. Mitt to come clean. To come clean, show us exactly what's going on here, because it looked like to me if we get Mr. Mitt to paying his fair share of taxes, and I'd see where he want to give tax breaks to people like him. I don't blame him. I mean, I do blame him because I couldn't do it. If I was worth $250 million laying around somewhere in the Cayman Islands or Swiss bank accounts, I surely wouldn't gripe one bit at kicking in more taxes under what the president want to do here now. I certainly wouldn't have not one problem with it at all to help the country out of predicament that we find ourselves in today, with the massive debt and that we're about to drown under. And here's Mitt again. This guy want to come in. First thing you want to do is add 100,000 troops to the military. Now, we downsized in the military. He wanted to come in and reverse that and add 100,000 more and add 8 more nuclear carriers and submarines to the military. Think about that. Here's Mitt Romney. He want to come in. First of all, I don't know where he get these numbers from. He want to add 8 more nuclear carriers and submarines and 100,000 more military personnel to our armed forces at an untold cost. And how you gonna pay for it? Oh, he didn't say. How is he gonna pay for it? Oh, he didn't say. Somebody. Congressional Budget Office, I believe, somebody came out and looked at what he was proposing and said that it would run up a $5 trillion extra debt to our already $16 trillion deficit. It would run that deficit up $5 more trillion over the next 10 years, y'all. His plan would. That's what the CBO said. Now, I didn't say that. I don't even, you know. Think of that. And how is he going to pay for it? He never did say. He said, when we cut tax on all these rich people, the economy is going to pick up. And that's going to satisfy the debt that way. We'll pay for it that way. Well, why didn't that happen when George Bush did all those tax cuts back in 2001? Why didn't that happen then? Why are we looking at ourselves today with all this big-ass debt that we got? That we're drowning in today here in 2012. Why? If the tax cuts were so great in growing the economy, and why are we in debt? Why did we the system collapse in 2008? Why? If the tax cut was that great, why did the system collapse in 2008? Just ask Mr. Romney and Mr. Ryan to explain it. They were in charge. They were in charge for the whole 10 years or 9 years or 8 years of Bush. They were in charge. Why didn't that prop up the economy to the extent that it would not collapse in 2008? Why? Because the trickle-down economics of the Republicans didn't work under Reagan, don't work now. And in fact, is nothing more than a bungee scheme, is all it is. A scheme to allow the rich to get richer, the rich to get rich, and the poor to get poor, to maintain the status quo. Those at the bottom will stay on the bottom, those at the top will stay on the top, and it's designed to be that way. It's designed to be just that way. That's their idea of conservatism, maintaining the status quo. That's what a conservative is here in the country today. They want to maintain the status quo. Hey, think about that. If they maintain the status quo, we're always going to be on the bottom of the economic pole. We're always going to be about one-tenth. We're always going to have about one-tenth of the wealth of the other communities. If Republicans, conservatism, if they get their conservatism in place, the status of the citizens will always stay in place. Those the haves will always have, and the have-nots will always have nothing. It's just a fact, yeah. It's just a fact. We glad that we do have such a clear choice that we can lay out for the citizens the two different competing ideologies here going forward, which where the Republicans and the Democrats want to take the country, and like I said, it's as simple as what Bill Clinton said at the. It's as simple as a philosophy of we're all in this together, which the Democrats is pushing forward, or a philosophy of everybody is on their own. Fend for yourself, which is what the Republicans want, the path the Republicans want to take the country on. Everybody fend for themselves. Don't look at your fellow a citizen for help, period. That's out. You're on your own. So the choice is clear, and I appreciate clarity of the choices this time, if not the viciousness of the argument. Hey, y'all. That's just about going to do it for us, y'all. Another night is coming on. We certainly did enjoy your company this evening. Tell a friend about us. We will be back next Saturday, same time, same place, y'all. September 29th. September 29th, y'all. Last weekend of the month here. We'll be back. 7 o'clock on Blog Talk, y'all. Blog Talk Radio. I urge everybody to check Blog Talk Radio out if you has got something you want to express, want to communicate your thoughts. Check Blog Talk out. It's a great medium for getting your message out. And we enjoy it. We think it's a great avenue to get involved, to become part of the conversation. We're out here every Saturday from 7 to 9, the Hushmo Black Forum. And once again, I'm your host, the Hushmo. We drive this train every Saturday, y'all. And once again, check my books out. I am an author. We do sell our products out here on our website, the hushmoblack.com, HUSHMOBLACK.com. Go to my website, follow us on Facebook, like us on Facebook, like us every place you can. Share our content with your friends if you like it. If you find something interesting about it, share it and tell your friends about us. Join in, send us email, let us know. If there's something that we've missed or something of interest you think might benefit the community or the country as a whole, let us know. We'll kick it around out here for you. Just get involved. I urge everybody to get involved. These are trying times, y'all, here in the country. We have to stay on top of, especially this political season, get out and vote again. Remember, the election's coming up 45 days from here, November the 6th. It's going to be paramount that everybody get out there and vote, y'all. Hey, y'all, that's going to do it for the Hushmo Black Forum this evening, y'all. We're going to sign off here in the y'all be good and safe out there this Saturday night. And until next week, ciao.
The Hushmo Black Phone. Advocated on your behalf by covering news and events affecting the African-American community. Check us out at the Hushmo Black Forum, www.blogtalkradio.com.